scripture is not one of my favorite scriptures. Listen to it carefully as I read it and see if you don't find it to be not one of yours, too. But I think it's the appropriate one for today's conversation. Excuse me. Luke 16, verses 1 through 13. Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, what's this I hear about you? Give me an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer. The manager said to himself, what'll I do now? My master's taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 900 gallons of olive oil, he said. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. Then he asked the second, how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat. He told him, take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it's gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Last week we began the first of our 4 weeks of conversation focusing around the power of trust. We started with a question that's the foundation for all the other things we'll consider along the way with this by asking a question as, can I trust God? That's where it all begins. I will not do anything in relationship with God unless I'm sure I can trust God. As we ask the question, the implied questions are, does God know me and love me? Does God have the power to do what he says he will do as we face the challenges we have in our lives day by day? Will he be with me and provide for me in my relationships, my work, my financial needs, and all the rest? Today I want to flip the question and say, instead of saying, can I trust God? Can God trust me? Am I worthy of God's trust in me? It's a hard question to face because we don't often like the answer as we look at it. Many of us will realize that there have been moments and situations where we've not acted faithfully in our relationship with God. We've missed the mark somehow. We've fallen short. To explain this painful question, can God trust me? Today's scripture from the Gospel of Luke is appropriate. Troubling, but appropriate. It's a story that most of us don't know how to take when we first read it. I've found myself not wanting to use it, but it's just right, I think, for this question, can God trust me? The image of the dishonest and untrustworthy steward or business manager and his actions in this story leave us feeling a bit disgusted, repulsed. His dishonesty in his job, his unfaithfulness to his master, that employer, his creative accounting, and his motives for it all feel a little slimy and completely self-serving. The parable gets even more difficult when we hear the owner's response to the manager's actions as he knows he's going to be fired, as he prepares for his life after employment. This dishonest plan is protecting his own future using his owners, the owner's assets for himself. The owner's response to that was he commended him. He commended him for being shrewd, for being wise, for being prudent. I read that and I wanted to say, what? In spite of the dishonesty and lack of regard for his master that he shows as he continues, even once he has been found out, to continue to waste his master's asset to prepare for his own future, the master is commending him. Anybody else find that odd? So what's Jesus trying to say here? Is he trying to teach the lesson that the end justifies the means? Is he trying to say that there's no honor among thieves? It's just the way it is. Get over it. Is he trying to say that you should get them before they get you? Well, those things don't fit with the rest of who Jesus is. And so if you take that against the whole body of his work or his words, that must not be what he's trying to communicate. What he's saying here, rather, is that we should use the property, the assets, our talents, our creativities, our energy, our passion, and even our financial resources, everything we have and are in our lives, to invest in other people. While we have those resources, because there'll come a time that we don't. And if we use them to invest in other people, when that time comes, we will have a place to go, to be, to live, as they're blessed by our gifts. At the end of the parable, he clarifies his meaning, because we've been given assets to use for the sake of the owner, God. To serve and bless God by blessing other people in every way that we can. That we should invest our whole lives while we have our lives, while we're alive, so that when the time comes, we'll have a heavenly home. We've talked before about what it means to be a steward. That a steward recognizes that he or she has been given the authority and the responsibility to use the assets that are not his or her own for the sake of the owner, to further the owner's vision and purpose. That's the steward's task, to manage prudently the assets of the owner for the owner's vision and purpose. In our case, we're stewards of God's property and God's assets. That gives us the authority and responsibility to invest all those things to benefit and carry out God's vision and purpose. Now, that's true. Then we have to accept that everything we have, everything, our talents, our creativity, our energy, our passion, our property, even our financial wealth belongs to God. God's given us the authority and the responsibility to invest all that we have and are to carry out God's purpose and further what God values. Bless you. Sorry, that's conditioned in me. If I hear somebody sneeze, I bless them. Friends, there's no wiggle room in this parable. There is no wiggle room here. We hear this and we want to say, yeah, but. But there simply is no wiggle room. It all belongs to God. Your idea that started your business, your passion for your family and for those around you, your energy that helped you build something in your life, that which you've accumulated through that successful accomplishment, the time of your life. It all belongs to God, including your family. There's no way around it. It belongs to God and not to us. We're great at rationalizing and sidestepping and looking for loopholes. So if we're to use all of God's assets, which he's given to us, to further his purpose, what is it, is his purpose? What does God value? God values us giving ourselves away to other people and doing that in the context of relationships with them. Now, everything about our lives in today's generation works against that. If we are lucky, we can push a button as we sit inside our car before we even get out in the open. The car door, the garage door goes up, we can drive out in our little compartment. Push the button that goes down, and we drive to do our thing, and we can go to take care of our business and get back in our car and come back and push the button and get back in the house, and nobody ever has to talk to us. We can live totally isolated, separated from other people. And part of that's just life anymore. And part of that's the way there are times I choose to do that, rather than take the time it's required to make the connection with somebody else. The times that I actually do make the connection, the people I make the connection with say, what's wrong with you? I mean, you ask a cashier or a server, and they just look at you. They don't say something because they aren't rude. It's, you know, it's like, there's something not quite right with you. I like it, but it's not quite right. God calls us to invest ourselves in the context of relationships with others around us and to invest the things that he has provided for us, the different currencies of our lives, in other people for God's sake, God's purpose. Now, as we consider that and find ourselves there, we're at risk about verse 9 in this story, if you want to take it home and read it again. God tells us to invest our assets in the lives of others so that when those assets, all our things, our very lives themselves, when those are gone, we'll be welcomed into eternal homes, into God's presence. He goes on to clarify even further, and he says, whomever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whomever cannot be trusted, is dishonest with very little, will also be dishonest with much. So if I've not been trustworthy in handling the earthly wealth, all the assets that we have, who will trust us with true riches? Not my words, but Jesus. And if you haven't been trustworthy with somebody else's property, who will give you property of your own? Not my words, but Jesus' words. And then he goes on and puts the final point on it. No one can serve two masters. He or she will have divided loyalties. Jesus said if we will either hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. And despise means neglect, devalue the other. If you hear nothing else this morning to this point, hear this next statement. Because I think it's at the heart of my experience, at least, and maybe yours. Our greatest ongoing struggle in trying to live as faithful disciples and stewards is our struggle between divided loyalties. Are we loyal to God and God's purpose in our lives, or do we prefer our own? Strip away all the yeah buts. And that's the question. Our greatest ongoing struggle in trying to live life as faithful disciples and stewards is our struggle with divided loyalties. Are we loyal to God and God's purposes in our lives, or do we prefer our own? You know, if we hear that this morning as being said to us this morning in this place, that's a pretty in-your-face kind of challenge. So how do we deal with it? Is this about choosing how we will use our time, whether we focus it on others and other purposes than our own or ourselves alone? Yeah, it's about that. Is it about how we use our skills and our energies, focusing on other people or ourselves? Yes, it's about that too. Is it about how we use our property and the financial wealth God has given us? Yes. The answer is yes, 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 because God, it all belongs and all comes from, belongs to and comes from God. There's not one thing you or I have that God has not given us or given us the capacity to obtain it. There's not one thing that you or I have that God has not given us or given us the capacity to obtain it. We often want to push back by saying, I've worked hard all my life and I've been able to accomplish much. I've been successful. That's all true, I'm sure. But how did you achieve that? Well, I used my talents, my energy, and my determination. Yeah. But who gave those things to you? In Deuteronomy, there's one verse among many other and larger stories that says, forget not the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, who gave you the capacity to obtain wealth. Everything that we have as God has made it possible for us to have it. So let's ask one more question then. Have I been trustworthy with the things God has created and placed in my life? Have we been trustworthy? Can God trust me to invest myself and all that I am and all that I have to do what God values? To invest in and bless others around me? If we look at today's story and we decide honestly that I have not, and this is me speaking about me, you have to decide for yourself, I have not always been trustworthy in my life as a steward of all that God has empowered me to gain. I've not always used that faithfully for Him. Remember, it all belongs to God. Then I'm in a really tight spot in my life. And if you answer honestly, then you are too. According to this story anyway, as the owner finds out that the manager has been wasting his resources, he calls for an audit and an exit audit at that. The steward in this story got fired for failing to be trustworthy in carrying out the owner's business. Because we've been less than trustworthy at times, we risk missing out on the blessing of what God wants to give us and to do through us. That's the bad news. When I'm unfaithful to being God's steward, I risk missing out on the blessing. The good news, though, is there's still time. That's a piece of this story, too. When the dishonest steward realizes he's wasted his master's resources and is going to be fired, he had time to act differently to assure a future for himself. Friends, it comes down to this. We have one job, and one job only, that is bigger than any title or position that you or I hold at work. The job is to live our lives for the sake of the owner of our lives, for God. And that'll look different in your life than it will in their lives or my life, but that's our task. If we fail at that, we miss the opportunity to be blessed. That's a lot of pressure. Do I have to be perfect? I'm not sure I can stand that kind of pressure. The answer is no, you don't have to be perfect. Employees always make mistakes from time to time. There's a story about IBM, one of these corporate giants for so many years now. It succeeded because, among other things, they have developed a culture which allows their employees to take risks and fail occasionally. Stories told of an employee who was in charge of a large new process, an innovation that, if it worked, would have placed IBM in the fast track to a whole new piece of what they wanted to do. It was a sound idea. Unfortunately, the employee made a couple of critical mistakes in the process that ended up costing IBM over $3 million, back when $3 million was a lot of money. For them, anyway. He was called to the CEO's office to explain what had happened and to give account for his actions. The employee waited outside the CEO's office, just sure he was going to be fired, and maybe even worse, he had to try to pay off some of this error. When he finally was ushered into the office and he told his story and answered the questions that the CEO had of him, he looked at him desperately and says, "Are you going to fire me now?" "To fire you? I just spent $3 million on your education. Why in the world would I fire you?" Employees don't have to be perfect, but they have to be faithful. Same is true for us in our relationship with God. You can guarantee that guy never made that very same mistake again. That was the education that he was given. We may say, "I really want to do more for others with the gifts that God's given me. I want to be a better steward of life and the assets which God has entrusted to me. I want to give more to support the ministries of our church. But how can I? I have all my resources committed, my time, my responsibilities, my finances. I'm either into debt or I've committed this piece of it to family and other obligations. I don't see the unused portion sitting over here, so I can just say, take that new pot and put it into." Well, I've heard that many times, and I've even said it internally at times in my own life. I appreciated your sharing your plan and your eloquent way of saying, take it or leave it. But I've dealt with that issue in my life, too. How do I take a new step? I was listening to a counselor one time some years ago sharing a story about a client family in anonymous ways to protect confidentiality. But as they talked and he learned about their dire crisis, their marriage was in shambles. His wife was on the verge of walking out the door. Their kids were in complete dysfunction, out of control. Their lives were crumbling around them. And it became clear that one of the primary roots of this was that the father, the husband, was absent in the family dynamic. Always at work. Not beating up on dads and husbands. This was the case for this family. And so the counselor identified that issue for the father. He says, "You need to be more present in the lives of your family." And he said, "But I can't. My job requires every hour that I put into it every week." "Then you need to find a different job that requires less hours." "But I can't, because then I can't pay the mortgage and other bills." And he said, "Okay, well then you need to sell and buy a smaller house and drive an older car and maybe settle for the cable basic package. Take one less expensive vacation a year." He says, but I've worked so hard to get here and to get all this. I don't want to go back." The counselor says, "Well, what it is you want. What do you want more? Do you want the outward trappings of success? Or do you want to save your family? We say, Lord, I want to do something more, but I don't know how to do it. I've got it all here. This is, but we can do it. If we want to do something different, we can do it. The truth is that we've worked so hard at some point to be where we are, we can work just as hard to get to where we want to be differently than that. We can do the hard work of realigning our lives, our time, our talents, our energies, our passions, our financial assets, to make room to reinvest it all, our whole selves. And that's the only way it really works, is to see that, I'm taking these facets of my life, you name whatever you want to name them as you identify your life, and doing this, stop that. Take them all as one piece. Say, God, here is myself. Here is my life. I give my life to you. Show me. Tell me. Make it clear to me so I can't misunderstand how you want to use me. And in that, I will make all these things that I happen to have in these different categories available to you. For when this happens here, all these pieces begin to get in place. It may hurt for a while. I don't like the idea of knowing there are cable channels I don't get. Even though I don't watch them, I want to know I get them. It may hurt for a while. I've always been the gadget guy. Buying those things before they came down in price. I've always wanted the luxurious kind of car, even if it wasn't the big one. I wanted to have all the bells and whistles on it. It may hurt for a while, whatever it is. To pare it back or reorganize it, realign it so it serves a larger purpose. But that'll allow you to experience blessings you'll never know, ever know, ever know otherwise. And it will give you an eternal home as your life is changed, as property of the owner, lived out for the owner's sake. So I want to ask you our question again. Can God trust me? Can God trust you? If I'm being honest, my answer is not always. He hasn't been able to, because I've fallen short. How would you answer? There's still time to live our lives forward for the one who owns us. And as we do live our lives forward, we don't look back at the times we failed to be trustworthy. He commends us for a new beginning. Now, friends, that was not an All Saints Day message. Or maybe it was. Because one of the signature pieces of being that faithful one who has blessed another through their living, that we would call them the saints of our lives, is to live this way. We're going to share in Holy Communion, even right now, those who are going to assist me, if you come forward and just stand here at the front. And as we do that, I want to invite you to come aware that saints aren't perfect, they're faithful. And to come aware that that invitation is for every single one of us. One day, if I live my life effectively, there'll be someone somewhere who will name my name and a bell's going to ring. I don't mean like Jimmy Stewart, every time the bell rings, an angel gets his wings. And God will say, well done, good and faithful servant. say, thank you, Lord, for the chance to be part of the adventure.